When was the last time you paused to dream big? Now, not big like cashmere pajamas, like really big. Here is where NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast comes in. Maybe 2022 is the year you quit your 9-to-5 to pursue your true passion, or take that adventure you've been itching for. Whatever you're dreaming of, NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the financial advice you need to finally get there. Get ahead and stay ahead of your finances with weekly nerdy wisdom from money experts Sean Piles and Liz Weston. Find NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hi, Mets fans. Welcome back to Amazing Avenue Audio, the show. My name is Brian. Me, as always, is Chris, and we're here for our late year tradition. Every year, we run through some of our favorite music of 2021. Chris, before we get into the actual picks, would you say this was a good year for you musically? Like, did you find lots of good new stuff? Bad year, sort of indifferent year? How did you feel about the year this year?
I'd say it was a good one, all things considered. It's a mix of, my albums that I'm going to talk about on this episode are all artists that I have at least mentioned once before, whether they were an album recommendation this year or not, at the end of our usual episodes. But getting back to being able to see, at least for a period of time, live music and feeling comfortable about it, it was really nice. And there was a mix of tried and true artists that I knew I liked that came out with stuff that I still like a lot. And then exposure to some new and different stuff to me. I'm just not going to end up talking about those albums because the other ones outranked them for me.
But sure.
But yeah, no, it was a nice mix. And I think in some cases just getting a different perspective on artists with whom I was familiar, but maybe not as much. So yeah, it was good. And shockingly, King Gizzard put out two records this year, and I'm not going to talk about either one on this episode. So that's not something I would predict.
No, that's truly shocking. For me, this is a weird year because I listened to a ton of music that was new to me. In fact, I think this year maybe was certainly more than last year. I listened to stuff that I had never heard before, but so much of it for me was not from 2021. I was exposed to a bunch of new, older music and different genres and all that. So I feel like I don't have a great sense for what this year was musically. I mean, there were still, 10 or so albums that came out this year that I really, really enjoyed, but I feel like it didn't hit a lot of bit for me. It didn't hit as much, blah, how can I say this? Not as much new music landed with me this year, but not because I thought it was bad. I just didn't hear as much of it, if that makes sense. But anyway, there's still always good stuff here. So, Chris, why don't you give us your first pick?
Sure. So, surprisingly, looking back at the things that we recommended on our normal episodes, where we talk about baseball, which basically doesn't exist right now.
Right.
I had not recommended Parquet Court's new record, Sympathy for Life, yet. We'll see. We'll figure out the rules if I can still throw that out there as an album rec again in the future. But yeah, it was, I think it's the record where they tried the most on some tracks to sort of expand and sound a little bit different. There's a few things mixed in there that either have like sort of almost funky jam band-ish stuff or more electronic instruments mixed in there. There's one song where Andrew Savage plays a melodica for basically the entire song. Just mixing it up a little bit, and taking some songs in a different direction. Those parts of the album I do appreciate. I don't dislike them, but the record's about half songs like that and then half songs that just sound like Parquet Courts. And those songs are phenomenal. You know, starting with Walking at a Downtown Pace, which starts the record. You know, they made a music video of, you know, illustrating the way that that song is embracing life in New York City. The lyrics to it are a reflection on, you know, clearly they were written during the worst of the pandemic. And the reflection on that and, you know, wanting to get back to the things that we all love about New York City. And, you know, whether they were the good or bad things about it. And the song just, you know, as everybody younger as than us in Slack would say, slaps. It's just, you know, it's got a drive to it. It's got a passion for the city. They made a music video for it that was just sort of a, almost like a video collage, for lack of a better term, of life happening in New York City as things had gotten significantly better earlier this year. And look, I mean, there's still a lot more going on now, even with some postponements and cancellations. You know, there's a lot more going on where the city feels something like what you're used to, as opposed to the long stretch last year where it didn't at all. Right. So yeah, that song starts it off, and then they get into it. Sort of alternates, you know, between what I would say is the traditional sound and like the different sound. And certainly all of the more traditional songs just really work for me. So they carry the record, but I do recommend listening to it, you know, the whole thing start to finish. And then if you, you know, as you go and listen to it more times, you know, do what you want to do. Either make a playlist of the songs you really love, or you know, remix the order of the whole thing if you'd like. Yeah.
The world is your oyster, listener.
Yeah, yeah. So in that sense, like, it doesn't. Some records, I feel like I would never say that about. Like, no, it all flows, you know, that one song connects to the next. And I'm not saying that they like chose a bad order or anything, but it's just, there's two different sounds.
Right. Right.
On the record. You know, so give it a shot. And there might be some people out there who like the five songs that I would rank 6 through 10. Those might be their five favorite songs. So yeah, I don't want anybody to rule out anything, but
right.
It's a good record. We got to go to the record release show in Brooklyn. They announced it like a week ahead of time. Played Music Hall of Williamsburg, which for them is small at right. this point. Had a really good time hearing them do that. So, yeah, glad you have had that music. And hopefully it won't be too long. You know, they're playing again in the spring. And I think by then... I don't think I'd have any reservations about going to a show if things go optimistically.
The great if. But yeah. All right. So my first pick is a really weird one in that I'm sad I'm picking it. This is going to need more context, and so I will give more context. One of my favorite albums of all time is by a band called The Wrens, and the album's called The Meadowlands. Came out in 2003. It's a sprawling sort of album about making an album, kind of, and it took 7 years for the band to make that album. Something like that, 6 years, 7 years. And they've been promising a follow-up ever since, and so much so that a couple of years ago, way pre-pandemic, the lead singer put on Facebook, "Hey, I live in Brooklyn. Who wants to come listen to the new album?" And so I had signed up, and I went to the lead singer's house, Charles Bissell's house, and sat in his basement and drank a beer with a couple other fans and listened to the new Wrens album. And it's like, it wasn't fully complete yet, but it was maybe like 80% complete. And ever since, he's been promising it's coming out, it's coming out, it's coming out. Well, earlier this year, turns out that the other songwriter, another songwriter in the band, he decided he was quitting, or he was going to, rather, he wasn't quitting. He was just, he was going to release his songs from the uncompleted Renz album as his own album, because he felt that the process was just taking way too long and that there were some broken promises and all that. So he formed, so Kevin Whelan is the guy's name, and he formed a band called Aeon Station, and the album is called Observatory. And the cover art is a half-built skyscraper, which seems like a pretty apt metaphor for a half-finished album. But so this album came out 18 years after the Meadowlands, and it features the songs he wrote for the follow-up to that album, along with some other new ones. And the other two members of the band, of the Renz, rather, joined him on this album. So this is basically a Renz album minus the main singer-songwriter and his stuff. So this is like half of the album we were supposed to get, plus some new songs. And it's really good. I think the album's excellent, actually. But I heard some of these songs initially as part of a conversation between these two songwriters, which has always been one of the benefits of the Renz, is that their songs often echo each other and reference each other. And so I really wish that this was going to be part of, that these songs were part of the Renz album that now is not happening. Charles Bissell is going to release a solo record with his songs and a few others. And I hope that people do what Chris was just talking about and make a playlist mixing the Aeon Station songs and the Bissell solo songs together into sort of what the album was supposed to be. It won't quite sound, you know, as cohesive, but it'll still be really interesting and really good. But anyway, like I said, I'm sad that they didn't finish that Renz record. I never got to see the Renz live, which, being as they're from New Jersey and named all a lot of their albums about New Jersey, well, I will kick myself for forever. I have seen Bissell do a solo set, but I hope that they can bury the hatchet at some point and maybe put out a new album or at least do a tour, because I really want to see this band live. But yeah, so for my first pick, it is Observatory by Aeon Station. Chris, what is your second pick?
So going in no particular order, except that I'll save the final one for the record that I hold in the highest regard from the year. Steve Gunn, The Unseen In Between. I think I did recommend that earlier this year. You know, he's just the guy who whose name I had known. I'd seen him play guitar, you know, supporting other musicians, but had never seen him play his own music. And getting to do that sort of, or knowing that I was going to get to do that, got me to listen to his stuff a little bit more. And this record that he put out this year, it's a pretty long record on vinyl. It's a double LP. And it's just a nice mix of, you know, sort of like, there's definitely a folk element to it in terms of the sort of the tempo and the songwriting and all that. But there's enough stuff going on, too, that there's a psychedelic sort of component to the album as well. And I think it's just a really nice blend. It's just very enjoyable music to listen to, relaxing but engaging, if that makes sense. You know, it's not a record that's going to put me to sleep, but definitely one that I think can, you know, improve the mood. So yeah, he's been around for a bit. You know, he's both, I think, somehow younger and older than I would think he is. You know, based on everything. But, oh, wait, hold on. I said the wrong record name.
The record name Other is Other You. You, right? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Other You is the record that came out this year. The Unseen In Between is the record that I think I recommended on an episode earlier. So, sorry about messing that up at the top. But yeah, Other You, it's, yeah, it's just good stuff. I don't know if this is like the, you know, mid to late 30s kicking in or what, you know. I think I don't necessarily think it is. I think I could have enjoyed it if this came out when I was 23, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the title song is the first track. I like that one a lot, but really it is good throughout. And, you know, to be able to make that kind of like a little more chilled out vibe with music and have it be catchy is not something that I think everybody can do. So yeah, a lot of credit to him for that. I definitely, look forward to listening to this one some more.
Yeah. Steve Gunn puts out good stuff. I haven't checked out this new album yet, but I'm excited to do so. All right. Next up for me is an album I did recommend on the show. I went back and I looked it up. I did recommend it. So sorry, listeners, you're hearing a repeat here, but I'll keep it brief because of that. This is the most recent record by Colleen Green. It's called Cool. She is a singer-songwriter who had not put out an original record in something like 5 years. And this album is, I would say, if you liked her previous stuff, this isn't all that different. It's sort of a nice refinement of it. I think it's maybe a little bit more, I don't know if I'd call it optimistic, but I'd call it maybe a little bit more, maybe there's a tad less cynicism to it. Not that it's like sunshine and rainbows, but it just seems like it's maybe a little bit more comfortable in her own skin. It's really, really good. It was produced by Gordon Raphael, who produced a Strokes record, and I know Chris is not the world's biggest Strokes fan, nor am I, but I really like what Raphael brought to the sound of this record. And I think that Colleen Green just does one thing that I wish more people of sort of her ilk do, which is that she writes really catchy pop songs that are, you know, fantastic and are really introspective and have like very clear melodies. But she also finds ways to make each of them just a little bit weird. Like the bass lines are not always what you'd expect, or there's some sort of snaky guitar parts throughout it. I think she just makes the music a little bit more interesting with some of her arrangement choices. And I wish that more singer-songwriters did that and didn't just, you know, although it's always wonderful to present like a nice straightforward song, my mind always goes to songs that have a little bit of a weirdness to them. Not enough to necessarily detract you from what you're trying to get across, like in writing a power pop song, but just enough to make it interesting. So I think that Colleen Green does that better than most. And so the album is called Cool, and that is my second pick. And Chris, what is your number three?
So we'll go with Amyl and the Sniffers. Comfort to me. If you've listened to the show, you've heard me talk about Amyl being just probably the best front person there is out there performing, other than Iggy Pop himself. You know, when he's still playing shows, certainly inspired by him, and just somebody who can own the stage. You know, our first exposure to her music and her band's music was when they opened for King Gizzard at Brooklyn Steel in 2019. I think it was. I think that was the last pre-COVID summer. And she just fucking rules. And this record's got it didn't catch me quite as much at first as the previous record did, but once it got it, you know, once I got hooked on it, it's definitely right up there. You know, just there's nothing too crazy going on in terms of, you know, it's just like classic punk with, I think I described it previously as having sort of a like an AC/DC influence. You know, there's a little bit of that guitar heavy rock that punk sometimes like shies away from or tries to act too cool for, you know. Mm-hmm. Like they have like mullets, and it's just, there's no shame in playing the style they play, and it works. So yeah, it doesn't slap you in the face like the previous album did. Like when you first listened to it, there's a little bit of a learning curve, I'll say, but just continued good music from somebody who's become one of my favorites. And you know, they were slated, we were not planning to attend because it sold out so goddamn fast, but they were slated to play in Brooklyn in December. They are slated to play there again in, I think, April, maybe March, you know, sometime in the first half of next year. But their show in early December was postponed or canceled, actually, because they themselves tested positive for COVID. But, you know, the last time we saw them play live was at Market Hotel, which for those who have been is just a tiny venue. On the second floor of a building in Bushwick, you know, I think it's the J train that goes by there that rumbles by literally right outside the windows. You know, trying to recapture that. That may not happen, but it, you know, I think I've said this to you, Brian. They sort of jumped multiple levels of venue size during the pandemic without even playing shows, which is that's pretty hard to do, and good for them. You know, if everything goes ahead as planned, it's Brooklyn Steel that they're going to play in the spring. And to go from like a little venue that holds, I think, 300 people to one that holds 1,500 or 1,700, you know, that's awesome to see, especially when somebody's such a good performer and deserves it. And on top of putting out this record this year, I know Iggy Pop, like himself, shouted them out when talking about music that he was into and recommending, which is just, I can't imagine higher praise for, you know, for them. So that was very cool to see. But
we should also mention former guest on the podcast, Brian Baker, shouted them out as well on Instagram. Which I know you were very,
that's right,
you were very into, because, you know, again, you were one of your favorite bands, and having a punk rock legend who you've interviewed talk about them is pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Indeed. Thank you for that reminder.
My pleasure.
When was the last time you paused to dream big? No, not big like getting swimsuit ready by spring, but really big. Truth is, we've all got dreams, passions we'd love to pursue, places we'd love to explore, people we want to spend more time with. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast is here to help you get there. Because while your dreams won't become reality overnight, with the right nerdy wisdom, they're closer than you think. Each week, our money nerds, Sean Piles and Liz Weston, give you the smartest financial wisdom to accomplish whatever your goals are for 2022. Whether you want to finally buy that second home, go back to school, or make early retirement possible, NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the advice you need to get ahead and stay ahead of your finances. Make 2022 your best year yet. Subscribe to Smart Money Podcast for the financial know-how you need to make your dreams a reality. Find NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
All right, my next album is, I don't even know how I first discovered this artist, or at least one of these artists, but I want to say it was during the sort of the early days of the Bandcamp Fridays, where Bandcamp was doing a really good job of highlighting different albums coming out. I think I read about this artist's 2020 album and really enjoyed it, and so I checked this out. And this is a collaboration. The artist I had heard of is named Sip, S-I-P. It's the pseudonym of someone named Jimmy Lacey, who is a synthesizer player, a keyboard player. But this is an album with another keyboardist named Pete Prezzano. So the album is called Sip Prezzano. And it's very much drony, kind of... very, very moody and very chilled out. There's a lot of melodica on this, which is interesting because you shouted out Parquet Courts using melodica before, and this album features a fair amount of melodica as well. And I sometimes get into a mood where I'm trying to do work or whatever, and I just put on some sort of drony synthy music, and it just puts me in the right headspace to do some work. So this is definitely in that type of a category. I don't have too much to say about it, if only because it is instrumental and it is pretty mellow. There's not a ton I can add to this, but I will say that I think it is an album that is going to get a lot of play in my house over the course of the next couple of years, even if I don't necessarily think about it. It's just really pleasant, really beautiful music. But I don't know if I'm going to be like, I think I'm going to put it on, like I said, doing the dishes, cleaning up around the house, doing some paperwork. Those are the types of situations I think this kind of music thrives in. But I'm going to really try to give it at least a couple more, like, full attention, doing nothing else, just listening to it nice and loud. Because I think it's really beautiful and deserves that, even if it's sort of an unusual type of record for that experience. Yeah, so Sip Prezzano is the name of that one. Chris, what's nice. Next for you?
Well, we'll go with Dinosaur Jr. Felt like a Dinosaur Jr. year. I'm not saying Dinosaur Jr. It parallels with pandemic life specifically. More so that Lou Barlow had put out a solo record, and Dinosaur Jr. put out this record, Sweep It Into Space, around the same time as each other. I feel like they were only a few weeks apart, but this was one that I recommended back shortly after it came out, and it's grown on me even more since then. I'd stand by that recommendation as given in the first place, but it's just they know what they're doing, and the mix of like mostly Jay Mascis songs with two Lou songs on a Dinosaur Jr. record is a very nice blend. And it's cool to get to hear, both of their writing and songs play out through that same band. It's a record that was produced by Kurt Vile. It's funny. I'm sort of indifferent on Kurt Vile. I think, he's played music that I've enjoyed. I'm not a diehard fan or anything, but he's always around. I've joked you can't have a music festival if Kurt Vile's not there. He's been at Solid Sound, he's been at Desert Days, he was at Woodsist, which we attended back in September in upstate New York. So he's the ever present Kurt Vile. So I think you can hear a little bit of his influence on some of the songs, being that he was part of the process of making it, but it's certainly not overwhelming. And there's a nice bunch of catchy stuff on here. And Lou's song Garden is definitely a standout.
That's like a top five Lou and Dino song, I think.
Yeah. I mean, his two songs on Give a Glimpse of What You're Not are two of my favorite of his songs anywhere, and Dinosaur Jr. songs. Definitely Garden is among those, as you said. It's another solid record. And it's very cool to me when bands who made it before I was conscious of them, and influenced so much, bands that are in the book, Our Band Could Be Your Life, that I read about, when I read that book, that they're still making good music, not just, well, one, not making bad albums, That's a good start. But, you know, making stuff that's legitimately good to me that I enjoy listening to. Mission of Burma accomplished that when they got back together. It's been quite a while since they've done anything now, but they had like 10 years that they reformed and made some damn good albums. You know, Dinosaur Jr. didn't have that officially long hiatus, but they did have a long break where it wasn't always the three of them.
Right.
You know, Murph and Lou Barlow were both out of the band at different points, as far as I recall, and they kind of went to the, all right, original lineup, make some new music in like the mid-2000s, and have continued doing so ever since. So to be able to do that and come back to it and not just have it be like a novelty thing and actually write, you know, interesting new music, it's pretty great, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's also crazy that they have now put out 5 records since they reunited, which is getting them close to like, I think they released 6 or 7 before they broke up. And by they, I basically just mean Lou Barlow, because Murph was only on, I think, 2 more records than Lou was on. And then the rest were just like kind of hired hands, you know.
Right.
They've certainly been around longer in the second incarnation than they were in the first incarnation. Their recorded career was 12 years before their hiatus. And we're now looking at, I believe it's 14 or 15 years at this point. So,
yeah,
in the reunited version. I was hoping that you were going to pick that album so that I could pick this next album that's sort of a counterweight to that, and that is Lou Barlow's Reason to Live. So nice. This is the aforementioned Lou Barlow solo album that Chris mentioned. He was doing this really cool thing through his record label Joyful Noise called the Artist Enabler Series, where for $5 a month you could be a subscriber to this like just constant stream of music. And so every month you would get something from Lou. Sometimes it was like archival stuff from going back to when he was in high school, some demos and things that he released. And every now and then you get new songs, and all of these songs were part of that series in different versions. Some of them just demos, some of them fully fleshed out. But so this album is, I think it's 17 songs, something like that. That is, that represents, 17 songs, a bunch of the songs that he released on the Artist Enabler series over the course of 2020 and early 2021. And, you know, I think that there's a really interesting bit in the press release about this that I read a couple weeks ago. I was prepping for this and was going through listening to some older stuff, some stuff earlier in the year, rather. And Lou Barlow said, and this is a quote, "People have this vision of me as this heartbroken, depressed guy, but this record feels so true to who I am, to this rich life I now have full of people I love." I think that's really nice that he feels like this is a maybe better picture of who he is, a little sunnier outlook on life. Not that this is necessarily like, you know, the happiest album you've ever heard or anything like that, but it's I just think Lou is such an underrated songwriter. I think that even among people who are fans of Dinosaur Jr. or who remember his band Sebado or The Folk Implosion, I think a lot of times people don't talk about him in the same breath they do, for instance, his Dinosaur bandmate Jay Maskus, or somebody Frank Black or Kim Deal from the Pixies, or I don't want to sort of really go overboard and say Kurt Cobain, but like he's certainly a contemporary of Kurt Cobain's, right? And I feel like people like that just get this respect of being these classic songwriters, and I think that Lou deserves to be in that conversation, both because of how consistent his songwriting has been over the last 25 years or so, but also because I feel like of all the people that I just mentioned, I think he has by far released probably the most music, or at least the most different iterations of his own music. He's been pretty interestingly, he has multiple bands and multiple projects, and he's always trying new things and putting out new. I think he takes the most chances of anybody of his generation that's still out there making music at this level, and that's really cool. And I think that Lou is somebody who I would personally probably start with the Brace the Wave. I don't know if is that technically an album? It's 9 tracks. I guess it's an album. I would start with the Brace the Wave album. That's my personal favorite of his more recent solo stuff. But I would say anywhere you start with him is probably a good place to go. And definitely check out Reason to Live. I think it's a really positive, fun, great sounding record with just some killer songs on it. So, all right, Chris, we're up to your number one. I did not do your Save the Best for Last. So your album's going to be near your number one, and mine are not ranked in any way. So sorry for that anticlimactic ending here, but what is your top album?
Yeah, no, hey, that was a last-minute decision here, but M. Du Mokhtar, Afrique Victime, I just don't even know what to say. It's this dude is and his band are making music on just their entirely own level. Listen to it loud. It's just, you know, of all the top guitarists in my world, he's the one who put out a record this year. I'm basically trying to not disrespect Nels Klein here. But for albums that came out this year, I don't think you're finding better guitar anywhere. It's just unbelievable the way he can play. And I know I've said this before, but his music often live and it's still like it's just you can't match that. But this record came pretty damn close to really getting into the places that they can get to when there's a crowd in front of them. So it's the title song of the record is still to me the very best on it, but there's a lot of really great stuff start to finish. The fact that they slow down and there's some acoustic guitar music on there is cool. You know, obviously any great guitarist can do amazing things on either acoustic or electric guitar. So it's cool to get to hear some of that just because so much, and I mean this completely as a compliment, but so much of what I had heard or, you know, whether it was on record or at his shows was just a barrage of electric guitar with incredible rhythm, components behind it. So the fact that they do both of those things on this record, you know, it was one that I was looking forward to before it came out. And I only love it more now than I did, on the week it came out, which is probably I probably talked about it as soon as it was a thing, you know? So yeah, that for me is my album of the year. And it's one that, I mean, Barack Obama had a song from it on his, thing, you know? You and I joked that you might have thought that I worked for him.
Yeah.
Based on multiple artists that I've recommended were included in his top songs of the year. But yeah, it's just if you're comfortable, if shows are happening, all those, you know, disclaimers, as we continue to navigate through the reality that we all live in now, see him for sure. I actually think that he has some dates that he's touring with Parquet Courts. New York is not one of them, but if you're a Mets fan who's elsewhere and you can see those two bands in the same night, I challenge you to find a better combination of bands to see.
Yeah, that's probably the most McShane approved double bill of all time.
Yeah, it might be.
I don't know if my album is my top album of the year, but I will say that this album to me feels the most 2021 of any album on my list. It's by the band Low. It's called Hey What. Low has various different sort of phases in their career, and this current phase is a very, very different one for them. The last album they made was called Double Negative, and it was widely regarded as sort of a big step forward for them. And I was actually not the biggest fan of that album. I thought it was fine, but not up to sort of my low standards. But Hey What takes everything that Double Negative did and just sort of blows it out of the water in terms of just taking it to the furthest extreme. There are only drums on, I think it's one track on this album. It is mostly super, super processed guitar and harmony vocals. And the songs are about, to call them apocalyptic is probably a little bit lazy, but they seem like they're songs about, you know, a really fucked up time, and we're living in a really fucked up time. And I don't know how much of this was recorded in 2020 versus 2021. I would imagine most or all of it. You know, this album came out, in September, but, you know, I would imagine that a lot of this was written or at least, conceived of in 2020. And it feels like a pandemic record. It feels like an album made in isolation, isolation from like their normal sound, isolation from anyone but the husband-wife duo of Alan Sparhawk and Mimi Parker, I don't know. My mother-in-law and grandmother pronounced it Mimi, but I know many Mimis, so let's call Mimi. Mimi sounds right. Mimi Parker. So it's just the two of them. It sounds very personal, but also very cold in a way. And it's very hard to describe. Like I said, it's not the most enjoyable record in terms of if you want to like have a good time, drink a beer, listen to it. But I think it's really, really, really powerful, really interesting, and in a weird way, both terribly sad and uplifting. It's sort of remarkable that a band 13 records in can do something this bold and different and pull it off this well. You know, sometimes I feel bad that I listen to a lot of bands I listened to when I was in high school and college and not finding new music as readily as I was then. But then when you hear all of the innovation that's happening with some of these bands, Low in this in particular, you know, I don't feel so bad because they're still making some of the most interesting music of their career, you know, 20 plus years on. Anyway, that is our top five records for this year. There are lots of other good albums that came out this year. I'm sure we could do some honorable mentions, but you know, go out and find some new music if you haven't yet this year. I would strongly recommend it. Anything else to add, Chris?
No. Low is a band that I still don't know very well, so I'll have to check that one out. I saw it, you know, you get near the end of the year and you sort of look around at the different lists of things out there. And if you're listening to this, I assume that's something you do.
Right, yeah.
So I've seen it out there on some of them, and they're a band. I feel like Wilco are fans of Low.
Yeah, Jeff Tweedy produced one of their albums.
Yeah. So a band that I don't know all that well, but I'm glad you ended with them because that'll give me a reason to listen to that record and see if, you know, if I feel like it's something that I've missed out on and can start to learn. So
it's a very, very weird album to start with for them. Like it's you know, it's like starting if you were just getting into Wilco and you started with Ode to Joy.
Yeah, okay.
But yeah, we can talk Low off the air. Yes. But thank you for listening, everybody. We truly appreciate it. Go to amazingavenue.com. It's been quiet lately, but it's a lockout. What the fuck do you expect from us? We'll hopefully get back to doing more real soon, and hopefully the lockout doesn't end too far in the future. You can find Amazing Avenue on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can find this show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Amazon Music, wherever you find podcasts, you can find us. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get podcasts. You can follow Chris on Twitter at Chris McShane. I am on Twitter at Brian Needs a Nap. Happy New Year, and until then, let's go Mets.
This show is supported by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Your dreams for 2022 are closer than you think. Maybe 2022 is the year you quit your 9-to-5 to pursue your true passion, or take that adventure you've been itching for. Whatever you're dreaming of, NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the financial advice you need to finally get there. Get ahead and stay ahead of your finances with weekly nerdy wisdom from money experts Sean Piles and Liz Weston. Find NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen to your favorite shows.